She told me she was going to call first thing to be sure and get the Sunshine League's annual Spring Bunny Poppy Hop booked before the schedule fills. She paused. Do I answer it, or would you rather take the call? I know she'd love to tell you about how successful her bunion surgery went. She held out the phone. What do you say? That he was in for a world of trouble, and he'd never been so turned on. Fine, you can assist me on Mr. Lismore's walk, but if you show up wearing designer shoes, the deal is off. Chapter 7. If Avery thought her first day as an official adventure guide would bring on excited jitters, then working alongside Ty felt like scaling the fault line. Now that she'd gotten a chance to watch him work, she'd figured out that he wasn't just skilled. He was a master explorer. He was great with the clients, keeping a casual feel to the hike while constantly assessing the terrain. Effortless perfectionist came to mind. He showed up in a beanie, mirrored aviator glasses, and dark cargo pants that hugged his muscular thighs and perfect butt. A view she'd spent the past 20 minutes staring at as he'd smoked her the second they'd hit the trail. Partly because he was the guide and his place was up front, but mostly because of the stupid pack. Not his, hers. While she'd shown up prepared for every situation, Mountain Man had shown up with a giant travel mug of piping hot coffee and nothing more. No pack, no picnic basket, nothing beyond the coffee and whatever MacGyver tricks he'd stashed in all of his 101 pockets. Yet she'd walk into a blizzard with him in a heartbeat. He was that capable. So halfway down the trail, when he turned around to reach for Avery's pack, she waved him off. I've got it, she said, squaring her shoulders to make herself appear stronger than she felt. It's not very heavy.
Then why do you keep weaving into me?
I'm not weaving. She was being drawn in, his big bad body and rugged elf of prowess acting like a magnetic field. I'm merely checking out the seasonal flora. He took a leisurely sip.
And here I thought you were checking out my butt.
She snorted. My focus is right where it should be, on the hike and the client. They call it laser focus.
Laser focus, huh?
She pinned her eyes with two fingers, then pointed them at Mr. L and Helga, who stood a few feet ahead, looking up at a giant redwood. It's the level of attention to the surroundings and client that separates a good guide from a great one. One minute he was sipping his coffee, and then he was stepping into her, his free hand reaching around to cage her against the rocks behind him.
And what is it telling you?
Avery's breath caught and her thighs hummed. Because his face was so close to hers, all she had to do was lean forward a whisper and they'd be kissing. That she's into him. His gaze dropped to her lips, and it dawned on her that he might think Avery was talking about herself. She backed up even farther into the rock wall, the damp stone pressing into her back, the dew seeping through the top of her jeans. Helga, I mean, she swallowed. She's giving off all the right signals. His lips curled up into a slow grin that had a ripple of awareness trembling through her.
What signals would those be? I'm just asking so I can cross-reference it with the guidebook you tote around.
Avery poked him in the peck, but he didn't move, so she looked to the side, and her heart warmed as she watched the older couple dance around each other. Look, right there. Whenever she laughs, she plays with her hair, which means she really likes him. She was impressed with the champagne and picnic basket, and based on how often she touches his hand or brushes his arm, if Mr. L plays his day right, he'll get a kiss goodbye for sure. Right then, as if in sync with the rhythm of falling in love, Mr. Lismore leaned in and whispered something that had Helga blushing. Isn't that amazing? She said. two people who found true love once and then lost it, yet they're willing to risk being vulnerable in hopes of finding it again. They were giddy with hope, Avery could tell. She knew those signs by heart.
Amazing, Ty agreed.
But when she looked back, she found him staring at her, an odd expression on his face.
I called your former boss at the bank.
Now feeling the opposite of giddiness and praying that he didn't get Carson when he called, she casually inquired, You did? What did they say?
That you were one of the best employees they'd ever had and were hoping you'd come back,
he said, studying her carefully.
It got me thinking. Why would someone leave a stable job after 5 years to work for a boss who is crabby and stubborn and notoriously cheap when it comes to hiring office help?
You're not cheap, she joked, even though she knew he was talking about his dad, who was so tight he squeaked when he walked. But what Dale lacked in wages, he made up for in bonus adventures. It would cost Avery a fortune to get the training she'd need to climb Sierra Point. Then again, she'd been there 3 months, and this was her first hands-on training.
Seriously, why did you leave?
Stable is overrated as the same. And she already knew what that life held. Long hours, paperwork, and a false sense of security. She wanted more. She wanted to live a life that made a difference. A life that made her happy. And she wanted to live it with people who loved and supported her. Ty seemed to have that love and support in spades, yet he was intent on keeping his family at a distance. Why weren't you here for Christmas? He hesitated, with his words and his reaction. He was trying to appear unaffected, and he was good, she'd give him that. But after a lifetime of reading between the lines with lab techs and doctors, Avery knew when she'd hit a sensitive spot. She also knew what it felt like to have no sense of privacy. It's okay, it's really none of my business. But she wanted to make it her business. For a guy who liked to portray such an easygoing persona, he rarely smiled. Life was uncertain at best, so living it surrounded by happiness but never embracing it was heartbreaking. Avery wanted to blame the depleted oxygen zone for her shortness of breath, but she feared it had more to do with how long they stared at each other, her silently offering to listen and him deciding how much he wanted to say.
I'm based out of Monterey, he said,
and a loud alarm beeped in his pocket. Do you need to get that? Eyes back on her lips, he said.
No.
It beeped again. You sure?
Your 30 minutes are up, Angel.
He reached in his pocket and turned it off, but didn't back away. And here I thought you were taking your time so I could check out your butt, she said, trying to hide her disappointment that the moment was lost. If you need to go, I can take it from here.
Of that I have no doubt, he said,
and she couldn't tell if he was joking or not.
However, since you're still in training, and I'm supposed to be training you, why don't you tell me more than their seniordate.com compatibility rating? You know, maybe touch on some observation that might be more guide-related.
Guide stuff, right. Avery smiled. Helga is having a hard time with the uneven trail and her cane, so when we hit the next bend, we should opt for the lower trail. It's a little longer, but flat. And Mr. L, poor guy, he's so nervous he can't stop talking about things he thinks Helga might find interesting, which explains why he's a little winded. Normally, this trail wouldn't faze him, but between impressing his date and demanding to carry the picnic basket, he's getting tired and might run out of wind before we make it to the final stop, which is why you suggested a brief break to look at the trees.
Not bad, Angel.
His gaze slipped to the pulse pounding at the base of her throat.
You're breathing a little heavy, too. Any particular reason?
His proximity, for one. Flirting with Ty was like standing in the middle of a lightning storm while holding a metal pole.
The idea of getting to know him? The anticipation alone was like being struck with a zillion volts of electricity. Secondly, she'd been so excited about taking such a big step toward hiking Sierra Point that she'd barely slept last night. Like any recent transplant patient, her immune system already struggled to keep balance, and a bad night usually led to a bad body, so a little jolt of electricity was welcomed, which was why she scooted a little closer to the sparks. I knew that appearing young and strong was important to Mr. L, which is why I let him carry the basket, even though it was way too heavy. She jiggled her pack, and the clanking of silverware and glasses sounded, and why I put all of the heavy things in my pack. He didn't break a smile, but she could tell he wanted to. She'd impressed him. As for my weaving body and wandering gaze, she said, and this time he did smile, smug and sexy. I was seeing if I could scout out some poppies for Mr. Lismore to pick for Helga. Orange is Helga's favorite color.
Poppies, huh?
Not only are we on Poppy Alley, but a man picking a woman flowers is wildly romantic. He studied her for a heart-pounding moment, and then ever so slowly, he tucked a stray hair behind her ear, his finger lingering on her lobe.
My mistake.
With a parting smile, he pushed off the wall and continued on the trail. Avery took a moment to collect her breath, stupid sexy smile, and make sure her pants weren't blazing from that lie. Confident that she had it together, she started walking and felt something tickle her ear. She reached up and found a flower tucked there. A California poppy. She glanced up to see if Ty was laughing at her, but he had already disappeared around the bend with her pack. And maybe a little piece of her heart.
By the time they'd made it to the lakeside picnic spot, Ty had a chance to think about all of the mistakes he'd made that had gotten him to this point. Agreeing to train Avery was on the list. Sticking a flower in her hair was definitely on the list, yet neither ranked as high as almost opening up to her. She'd looked up at him, those big expressive eyes filled with understanding and compassion, and he'd wanted to fall in. Even more powerful was the disappointed look on her face when he'd closed right up. That bothered him more than it should have, which was why he needed to wish Mr. L and his lady friend a nice day and get back to the lodge, where he had enough work to keep him busy for 2 weeks solid. Perfect timing, since that was the end of his vacation time. Only his trainee wasn't on the same page. She helped set up the picnic, even laying out a handmade quilt she had in her gypsy camp and pouring the champagne. But then, instead of wishing them well and heading toward the lodge, she wished them well and headed behind an outcropping of boulders, where she carefully selected the perfect little spot for her own picnic. Fitting, since she'd packed enough food for a family in her sack, fried chicken, fruit salad, and he squinted as she pulled out a container of mom's pie? Son of a... She was planning to stay for a while. A long while, by the looks of it. Taking his hat off, Ty hiked up the small embankment and stood over her, purposefully looming. What are you doing? Eyes closed, she took in a deep breath while the breeze blew a few stray hairs that had escaped. Her nose was pink from the chill, and her cheeks flush from the hike.
Breathing it all in?
Well, breathe fast, because I have to get back, he said. She slowly blinked up at him.
You go on ahead. I'm going to wait until they're done so I can help Mr. L carry everything back.
That wasn't the deal, he pointed out, sounding an awful lot like his dad. The deal was a one-way hike where you assist me, then you help me organize the office while the guests walk home. Alone. She scanned the trail leading back to the lodge. The trail, so clear it could be seen, winding all the way around the lake. A concerned frown creased her brow.
It is an easy trail,
You think they'll be okay?
Perfectly safe, and they'll be fine. Or he wouldn't have left them there.
Great. If it's safe, then you won't mind if I stay.
He did mind, and that was a problem. She was fine sitting there, yet he had reservations about leaving her behind, which was all kinds of crazy since his goddaughter, Emma, could find her way home from there, blindfolded. But Emma wouldn't be tempted to top off this romantic senior outing with a romantic view of the lake from a higher elevation. There's a lot to do back at the lodge to prepare for Sarex. Equipment to catalog, schedules to spreadsheet.
Will we have time for lunch?
I'm not a total hard ass.
Great, then I'll take my lunch here and meet you back at the lodge.
She crossed those sexy legs of hers to make a table for her pie while she dug through her pack, coming up with a fork.
Unless you want to share.
She held up the pie.
I brought plenty if you want a bite.
Watching her sit there, the sun shining down on her, glistening off her curls and casting a warm glow over her body, he wanted a bite, all right. Pie would be nice, too. Almost as nice as it felt to make her smile earlier with the flower. A total wuss move that his guys would ream him for, but nice all the same. His phone pinged again, echoing off the rocks and onto the lake.
Guides are supposed to have their phones on silent during treks, emergency use only, so as not to disrupt the client's time in nature,
she said sweetly. It's not a personal call, it's business. He pulled out his phone and checked the screen. He saw he'd missed several calls and texts from Harris. The mechanic called back. He'll meet you at the boathouse at noon, unless you're too busy picking posies. Prick. He dashed off a quick text that he'd be there, and Harris texted back immediately. Stop flirting with the cute adventure girl and call your mom. He'd no sooner checked his phone to find 5 missed calls from his mom when his phone rang again. He blew out a breath. I have to take this. He pointed to the spot on the ground where she sat. Don't move. She mimed cuffing herself to the rock, smartass, and then leaned back, presumably settling in for the duration of Mr. L's courting, even stretching out her legs and taking a big bite of pie. Walking a few feet away, Ty answered, Hey, Mom, I'm on a trek with some guests. What's up? He asked, ignoring the way Avery smirked when he admitted it was his mom calling.
Poppy Alley with Art Lismore and Helga, I heard. How very sweet of you to accommodate him. And smart, considering Art is the new board chair of Jeepers Run.
He is? He eyed Avery, sitting back and soaking up the sun. Then he remembered all of the attributes about the lodge she'd casually thrown Art's way during the hike and smiled. She was good, better than he'd originally given her credit for. Jeepers Run was the largest jeeping club and association in the country, an account Dale had been trying to land for over a decade, and based on Art's schoolboy grin, the man liked what he'd seen so far.
Which is why Avery thought to pack some of my pie. Show him some home-baked hospitality, she said. Did you get your piece?
My piece. He looked at Avery, who made a big deal of shoving an enormous bite into her mouth and smacking her lips.
I sent enough for the whole party with Avery, but I explained that the biggest slice was yours.
Thanks, Mom. But if you knew I was with a client, why'd you call? Irene fell uncharacteristically quiet, and Ty leaned against a giant sequoia for the added support he knew he'd need. When it came to his mom, silence was never a sign of peace. Mom, what's wrong?
Have you talked to your dad today?
No, he admitted. Ty hadn't talked to him since their lovely welcome home dinner a few nights ago. It had been a deliberate avoidance. Dale hadn't gone out of his way to connect either, so Ty had gone with it. Only now his mom was involved, so he needed to fix it. I'll find him later and smooth things over.
That would be lovely. It breaks my heart to see you two argue.
He heard his mom worrying through the phone, which started a little worry knot forming behind his right eye.
But maybe you could find him now?
He looked at his watch. I have to get back to the lodge and meet a potential mechanic in a few minutes, and I have to put together an order for the new climbing equipment.
I know you're busy, and I appreciate everything you're doing, but it's just that he walked out of here early this morning, and I haven't seen him since.
For as long as Ty had been alive, Dale ate with the sun, was at work before the night's frost could melt, and didn't come home until dinner was served. So his being gone was not a reason for concern, but ever since Ty had come home, something had been off with his old man. From the condition of the lodge to not taking on as many treks. Then there was his behavior the other night. Sure, Dale was ornery as hell, but he never raised his voice at the dinner table. Is there more going on with Dad I should know about?
Everything's okay,
she said too brightly. Define okay. There was another lengthy pause, long enough to allow that throbbing to encompass his entire frontal lobe. Mom, I can't help unless I know what's going on. In the background, a chair ground against the floor, and a heaviness settled at the back of his neck. This was obviously a talk she needed to have sitting down, and that didn't bode well for his timeline. He could picture her, staring down at the table settings, worrying the silver necklace she always wore while counting the seconds. Most folks only saw the courageous woman with the gentle smile, but Ty knew that she was a worrier. She could drive herself sick with worry. He'd seen it happen too many times to count.
I don't know what's going on, she finally said, her voice thread thin. He hasn't been himself lately. Missing appointments, overbooking things, even snapping at the employees. Then today, we were supposed to have lunch together, meatloaf sandwiches. Only he didn't show up or call, and he never misses my meatloaf sandwiches.
Dale also never missed a date with his wife. It's not even noon.
Lunch is at 11:30 sharp, has been for 36 years.
And Dale was as punctual as he was a hard-ass. To him, tardiness was a direct commentary on the lack of value someone placed on a person's time. I'll check on him after I meet with the mechanic, Ty promised.
Thank you, honey,
she said, and he could hear the relief in her voice.
And would you let me know where you find him?
She disconnected, and Ty stared at the phone for a long moment. She wanted to know not when he found him, but where he found him. As he pocketed the phone, he looked up to find that Avery was no longer sitting on the lower boulder where he'd clearly told her to stay put. He scanned the area looking for her orange vest, which was so bright it glowed, but he didn't see her. He whipped out his cell phone to call her, and that was when he noticed her standing on one of the other boulders, staring out at the lake as if she were witnessing paradise. Her arms were out to her sides, letting the breeze blow through them, her smile intoxicating, her breathing hard. She'd hauled ass up those rocks, no doubt taking advantage of his being distracted by his mom. Ty took easily to the rocks, scaling them in a matter of seconds, only stopping when he reached her side. What happened to staying put? Avery didn't turn to look at him, didn't even apologize for traipsing off. She just kept on smiling as if it were the best day of her life.
What happened to no business calls during a trek?
He pointed to his clients. They are toasting with champagne, so the trek is officially over. She looked his way.
Great. Then I'll spend the rest of my lunch enjoying the views.
You mean making sure that our special VIP guest, the new board chair for Jeepers, is enjoying his stay? That got her attention.
How did you know?
Oh, wait, your mom. How did my dad finally get him to come and visit?
he asked. And the way her gaze skirted away told him everything he needed to know.
You brought him in?
His late wife and I met in Reno. She became a good friend of mine, so when I heard that he was having a hard time moving on, I invited him for a visit,
she said, her voice thick with emotion.
I knew all he needed was a new view, a different perspective to jumpstart his life. If he came here and fell in love with the land enough to bring the Jeepers Run back, which I knew he would, then all the better. Only he came and met Helga.
She looked down on the couple and sighed.
And look, he's smiling.
Her eyes met Ty's.
The last time he smiled was when he was with Ruth at the hospital.
Ty thought about that, about how open Avery had to be to read people so well. He didn't know if he would have the strength to do that, because in order to be open to others, she had to really put herself out there. And that was a place that, although Ty admired she could tap into, he'd never want to be again. Why didn't you tell me? He asked quietly. Had I known it was art, I wouldn't have given you such a hard time when you booked the hike.
Would it have mattered?
She asked quietly, looking back out at the water. And even though he couldn't make out her expression, he could tell that his answer was important to her. Ty wanted to get it right, wanted to make her smile again, but he didn't know what that answer was. Sure, knowing just how important it was to impress Mr. Lismore upped the stakes, had him rethinking every step he'd made and questioning how he could have made the hike better. Only he'd bet his best skipping rock that for Avery it didn't matter. She'd probably say that everyone deserved the same fabulous experience no matter the status. And she'd be right. Ty stared out at the lake, watching pine needles skate across the water while a strong breeze blew ripples across its wide surface. Perfect skipping ripples, he thought, remembering how he and Garrett used to spend their days on that lake, waiting for ripples like these. Then they'd spend hours picking the perfect rocks to go the distance. The day they'd buried Garrett, Ty had come down to these very shores and stood for hours staring out at the water, holding his favorite skipping rock in hand. He'd rolled it around in his palm, memorizing the smooth edges and the circular shape. It was Garrett's last wish for Ty to skip it. Just like that day, Ty's hand found its way into his pocket, his fingers moving back and forth over the edge, trying to soothe his emotions. He'd never skipped the rock, afraid that tossing it into the lake would be like tossing away his brother's memory with it. Because once it was gone, the wish would be over. And then what would Ty have to hold on to? He'd been too damn selfish to grant his brother his last wish, and too damn scared to run for help. His chest tightened with anger, as it always did when he came home, which was why he valued his distance. I don't come on the holidays because there are guys on my team who have wives and kids, a family who needs them around. So I take on extra hours so they can spend time with them, he heard himself saying. A warm hand settled on his arm, soft and full of understanding. It was amazing how much Avery could convey in a single touch. He hadn't been this connected with someone since Garrett.
You have a family too, and I know they miss you when you can't come home.
If I was around all the time, they wouldn't miss me anymore. And then where would they all be? Thinking about Garrett and everything they'd lost? Nah, that was burden enough for Ty. He didn't want his family carrying that around too.
I took a leave of absence from the bank because I was sick, she said. And when I got better, I found out that my fiancé, the guy I thought I'd marry, didn't feel like waiting. Since he was the senior loan officer and I worked at the desk next to him,
Going back was... He felt her shrug and glanced her way. The emotion he saw in her eyes was powerful enough to take him out at the knees. It wasn't just sadness she was feeling. The pain rolling off her went soul deep. I knew it would never be the same. Ty studied her for what felt like an eternity, in awe about how open she was, how she wore every vulnerability and insecurity on her sleeve for the world to see and judge. Yet she wasn't embarrassed by it. It was as if she found strength in it, found her identity. He's an idiot, he said and meant it. Avery was beyond sweet, beyond beautiful, beyond perfect. Avery was an angel. Sure, she was impulsive and a dreamer and drove him a little crazy, in the best kind of way. Yet some pencil pusher had walked away from her, made her believe it was her fault, that she was the one lacking. Ty could see it in her eyes.
He isn't an idiot, she said, but her smile said she appreciated the support. He just wasn't as strong as I thought.
And wasn't that the heart of the problem? Because Ty wasn't who she thought he was. If so, she wouldn't be looking at him as if he had single-handedly scaled Everest. He'd faced down that beast of a mountain and came out the victor, but only because it was less terrifying than facing his past. Enjoy your lunch, Angel. With a final wink, Ty made his way down the rocks. An odd sensation filled his chest as he descended. The more distance he put between them, the more acute the sensation became until all he wanted to do was climb back up and share lunch with Avery. Funny how the last thing he had time for was lunch with Avery, yet that was all he could think about. She had this magical calming ability about her that soothed his restlessness, made him feel grounded. He'd reached the bottom when she called out to him.
Your dad's probably down in the boathouse. He goes there when he's having a bad day because he knows your mom won't think to look there.
Ty looked up, his hand shielding his face from the sun. And man, she was beautiful. Her blonde curls hung long and free today, cascading down her back while the afternoon light cast a golden glow around her face and body.
How do you know it's a bad day?
He asked. Even from a distance, he could see her face soften, watch her worry that lip, something he noticed she did when taking others' emotions into consideration before she answered.
Your mom called you.
Damn if that didn't sting. Then again, the truth usually did.
Chapter 8.
Wasn't sure you were coming. Was just finishing up with Brian here,
Dale said, and Ty nearly groaned aloud as his dad patted the mechanic on the back and not so subtly steered him toward the exit to the boathouse. Brian still had on his jacket, and his confused expression said he hadn't even opened his toolbox. Finishing up was not what Dale had in mind. He was brushing off. Not the way Ty wanted this meeting to go, and definitely not how he wanted to broach the subject about hiring a new equipment manager. The only thing Dale hated more than change was being left out of the loop.
I'm here now, and since Brian came all the way from Incline, why don't we at least let him check out the boats in question, hear what he has to say, Ty suggested. It's your meeting.
Dale put his hands behind his back tightly as if they were shackled.
Don't mind me, I'll be over here tinkering with my boat.
Of course he wanted to tinker with the boat that Ty had called Brian about. They hadn't seen each other, much less spoken, since dinner. And his dad wanted to hide. Fine by Ty, so when Dale went to the back of the boat, Ty took Brian to the front. Sorry about that, a little miscommunication, Ty said, shaking the man's hand.
Not a problem. My dad owns the largest machine shop in Reno.
which is why I went into boats. After a shared nod of understanding and a silent moment of male bonding over difficult dads, Brian looked over at Dale, who was staring out at the dock. Ty couldn't put his finger on it, but something was different. He was wearing his usual uniform of pressed work pants and a fleece jacket, his hair the same slick style he'd worn since he was in the service, and his attitude was dialed to grumpy old man. Only he looked smaller, Ty thought. Maybe it was that his clothes hung a little looser than normal, or the way the landscape towered over him. But Ty really thought about what Avery had said, reflected on how frazzled his mom had sounded on the call. He wasn't sure what a bad day entailed, but if he wanted to feel comfortable leaving in a few weeks, he needed to find out. Lighten his dad's load and delegate enough responsibility to qualified people so Dale could ease up a bit and Irene wouldn't worry so much. "This is the boat that we need to look at first," Ty said. "It has been chartered for 3 weeks from now. I need to know if it's safe to take out, and if not, can we get it running by that time?"
"Understood."
Brian hopped on the cruiser, gaining sea legs in a matter of seconds. He made his way into the cockpit and gave the dash an external once-over, making sure everything was in its right position. He started her up. The engine sputtered against the cold temperature, the exhaust crystallizing in the air as it struggled to find its rhythm, letting loose a low whistle that had the same ominous ring as Harris's. He shut it down.
"That bad?" Ty asked. "It's not good, I can tell you that. When I talked to Harris, he said it hadn't been serviced in a few months. It sounds like it was a lot longer than that, but I won't know what's going on until I get in there and look at it."
"It was serviced last month," Dale said from behind, the boat swaying with every step he took, giving away his impatience.
And if that weren't enough, he squeezed up behind Brian to look over his shoulder, doing his best impression of a backseat mechanic.
"And I know it was serviced because I serviced it right before I took a group from Sacramento trout fishing."
"Trout fishing?" Brian glanced over his shoulder.
"You sure about that, Mr. Donovan?"
"Of course I'm sure. Took them around the lake to Crystal Bay and caught a 31-pounder. I got it in the log."
Dale pulled open the cabinet above the console, rummaged around, and then rummaged around some more.
"Mark must have misplaced the damn thing. He was always moving things around."
Ty and Brian exchanged a look. "Dad, Mark left in November, around the same time trout fishing went out of season. So either Dale was taking folks fishing illegally or he was lying. And Dale might be a hard ass, but he wasn't a liar, and he wouldn't risk the lodge's license over a trout, even if it was a 31-pounder.
After everything I taught him, he left me high and dry right before the holidays."
Dale was back to digging through the cabin for the logbook. When he couldn't locate it, he yanked open the lower drawer, and a bundle of maps fell to the ground.
"Broke your mom's heart. You know how she takes people in like family. So when they leave, she gets all emotional. Damn it, I know it's in here."
"It doesn't matter. Brian will be able to tell when she checks her out." Dale slammed the drawer.
"The hell it doesn't, because that log will prove it was serviced. And then Brian won't have to waste time checking things that don't need to be checked."
"Dad," said Ty, picking up the maps, "Mark left 4 months ago."
"I know that,"
Dale yelled, his temper spiking. So much for hoping an audience would cause Dale to rein in his heavy-handed approach to change.
"Then the boat hasn't been used since November?"
Brian asked Dale, but he was looking at Ty for direction on how to handle the situation. Ty had not a clue. He'd never seen his dad like this. Stubborn, yeah. Pig-headed, absolutely. Losing his shit in front of company? Never. Dale was unshakable, steady as they came. but he was shaken now, his body visibly stumbling as he straightened to scratch his head.
I guess I don't know,
Dale said, and just saying the words seemed to take the wind right out of him. He stepped back a few feet and looked up at Ty as if he had the answers.
I know Nelson came by once or twice to help me work on the boats before we put them away for the winter. And Nelson is the best in town. Been working on our boats since my dad ran the place. We can give him a call, see if he remembers the date.
That's okay, Mr. Donovan, Brian said. How about I take her out and see how she handles? I won't charge you unless I find something wrong.
Sounds good, Ty said, as he hopped off the boat, wondering how many other logs were going to wind up missing. Dad, you and I can hang back while Brian works his magic.
It's your call,
Dale said as he climbed off the boat. With a confident nod at Ty, man speak for I'll run her until I find every problem, Brian cleared the dock and pulled the boat out onto the lake. Ty watched the white wake slice through the flat surface and lop against the side of the dock. And he wondered what the hell had just happened. His dad was lost in thought, too, but his body language was hostile and agitated. Mom was looking for you, Ty said, going for neutral territory. Whenever they fought, it was always his mom who managed to smooth things over. Dale walked toward the cluster of upturned kayaks on the dock instead of answering, and he took a seat on the one closest to the water. Pulling a cigar from his pocket, he rolled it between his fingers, something Ty had seen him do 1,000 times before. Even though he hadn't lit it, a bitter cherry smell scented the air. It was almost as strong as the tension. She was worried, Ty added, his comment met by more silence. Fine. If Dale was content to sit and smoke his damn cigar and watch the water lap, who was Ty to force him into a conversation? A conversation he sure as hell didn't want to have either. He thought about Avery, sitting up on that bluff and eating her pie, all by her lonesome, and wondered if he could still catch her. Only the first question that would come out of her pretty mouth would undoubtedly be about his dad. Shit. Ty took a seat. Does she know you come out here to smoke? Dale ran the length of the cigar along his nose, smelling it.
Haven't smoked one of these in over a decade. Not since your mother said if the cigar didn't kill me, then she would.
A small chuckle escaped, and it was such a foreign sound, Ty glanced at his dad. He was actually smiling. Correction, it was as close to smiling as one could get without showing actual teeth. Or joy. But Ty took that as a sign to keep talking. If you don't smoke it, then why do you carry one around? Dale took one last sniff and tucked it back in his shirt pocket with a pat.
Same reason you carry around that rock. Habit, I guess.
Ty's throat burned. Swallowing down years of remorse and disappointment hurt like hell. After the funeral, Dale had never once talked about Garrett with Ty. He remembered his dad standing here by the boathouse in his suit, looking out over the lake. His body so still, Ty couldn't tell if he was even breathing. It had been raining, so sheets of water spilled off the dock, but his dad hadn't bothered to change after the funeral. He'd left Irene to handle the guests and walked straight here, to stare out as a storm thrashed against the lake. Ty had gone looking for Dale, and when he'd found him, it was as if every step he'd taken to bring him closer tore them farther apart. By the time he had reached Dale's side, the shame and guilt were so heavy Ty could barely speak. He'd prepared his apology, knew exactly what he was going to say, and was ready to take the blame for sneaking out, for ignoring the rules, and for Garrett's death. All that he'd gotten out was, "I'm sorry." Ty remembered looking at his dad, waiting for him to look back, to say something, anything to make it better. Reassurance that he was still loved, even though he didn't deserve their love. But Dale never turned his head, never met Ty's desperate gaze. The only reassurance he offered were two words, simply spoken and without emotion.
"Me too."
Ty had walked off the dock that day, knowing that he wasn't forgiven. 15 years later, and not much had changed, except that Dale was the one who needed help, and Ty wasn't going to walk away.
"Brian seems like a good fit," Ty began, hoping to warm his dad up to the idea of hiring him on.
"Avery said you liked him when he was a guest."
"Nice guy. Good family man. But he's a bit young."
"I spoke to his boss this morning, and the guy couldn't say enough. He's been working on a bigger fleet in Tahoe, mainly party barges. But I think that he's ready to step up to equipment manager."
"He did some work for Jasper over at North Star, maintaining their lifts and snowmobiles. Jasper even claimed that for a young gun, he could sweet-talk anything with gears,"
Dale said. Surprised by his dad's comment, Ty felt his shoulders relax. Maybe he wouldn't have to fight his dad on this. Maybe Dale would make it easy on everyone and welcome Brian with open arms. Dale picked up a pebble off the ground and tossed it into the lake.
"Doesn't make him a good manager."
"Then again, maybe not." "How long do we have until Sequoia Elite Mountain Rescue comes back for the inspection? 2 weeks?" Dale shifted with unease.
"About that."
"2 weeks to get the boathouse in shape, the outdoor equipment cataloged and updated, the trails and staging areas finalized, and a new guide hired. And that doesn't include the lodging side of things or handling the schedule until Brody comes back." Not that Ty intended to hire him back. The guy had a lot of questionable sick days and took a very liberal approach to customer satisfaction, but that was a discussion for later. "We need someone overseeing the boathouse so that I can focus on the rest. I know Brian might not be your top pick, but the good news is he's skilled, reliable, and available."
"If it weren't for Sarex coming up, I wouldn't need anyone's help,"
Dale argued.
"I've managed on my own this long. Had to since there was no one here to hold my hand."
Since arguing back would get him nowhere fast and would only add to Dale's stress, Ty swallowed down his frustration and took a deep breath. It didn't help. He tried it again, this time watching the ripples slowly beat the shoreline. Nope, still pissed. Dale had a way of doing that, spinning Ty right off the planet with one well-placed comment.
"I know, Dad. You don't need anyone. But you know what? You have people here willing to help, so unless you want to explain to Mom why Sarex is moving to Bear Valley, then step back and let us do our job. I promise when you pass the inspection, I'll be gone and you can go back to handling things, okay?"
"Great, you'll be gone and leave me with some young hipster running my boats."
With a dismissive shake of the head, Dale stood, taking a little longer to straighten than normal, and headed back toward the lodge. Ty watched him storm off, his feet pounding the pavement with intent, and even though a bitter sadness pushed at his chest, Ty found himself laughing. A deep, guttural laugh that hurt as much as it brought release. Not only had he received permission to hire Brian, he'd been chewed out by a man wearing fucking house slippers. Chapter 9. Tonight was the night, Avery thought, making her way toward the bar, her orange cowgirl boots echoing off the cobblestone sidewalk on Lake Street. The sun was setting on what had turned out to be a pretty spectacular week, and riding the high, she decided she wanted to pay tribute to one more special person in her life. So when Liv told her that some of the ladies from Living for Love were at the Backwoods Brew House for happy hour, it was clearly a sign to be bold. And right now, Caroline Peters needed a little bold in her life. She was undergoing bone marrow transplant surgery next week, and Avery wanted nothing more than to put a crown on her head. So she'd told her friends she'd meet them there. Only when she opened the front doors of the brew house, she was surprised to find not a few members, as Liv had said, but the entire group. They were gathered at the back of the bar, wearing orange Princess Caroline buttons with matching tiaras and boas. "Perfect timing," Liv said from the head of the table. She wore a pair of trendy hip huggers, a black pea coat, and red heels with a matching scarf and knit cap. If not for the fitted tee that said hashtag like a mom, she'd look like a co-ed from the local campus. Irene was finishing up passing out everyone's buttons. "I've got yours right here." A portly woman with bottle red hair and a perpetual smile separated herself from the group to pin Avery with a button when she reached the table. "Irene, they are amazing." Avery greeted her with a big hug. Irene smelled like cookie dough and Christmas morning, and she hugged like she meant it. "When did you have time to make these?"
"I overheard Liv at the market talking about how you were going to ride Widowmaker tonight for Lola's granddaughter, so I asked Mavis to make these,"
Irene said, tapping the button with pride. Her grin was so big it was infectious.
"Me and the girls thought we could pass them out around the hospital, so when Caroline shows up next week, they'll all be wearing her buttons."
"This is..." Avery looked at the table full of women, spanning several sizes, backgrounds, and decades, and her voice cracked. At first, they had nothing in common, yet it was their shared history with loss and the same desire to make a difference that drew them together. And together, they were going to make a huge difference in this precious girl's life. "Really, truly amazing.
A little ray of sunshine can cut through even the darkest of days," Irene said,
and Avery closed her eyes against the building emotion. Those were the exact words she had said to Avery when she'd shown up at her hospital room a few years back, unannounced, with a freshly baked pie and two forks.
"Caroline will love it," Avery whispered, "almost as much as she's going to love you being rodeo princess for the night,"
Liv said, tipping an imaginary hat.
"I thought you could use these to decorate Caroline's page when you're done,"
Mavis said, then handed her a sheet of beautiful hand-painted princess stickers. Mavis Bates owned Pins and Needles, the local craft store. She was north of 70 and a porcupine of a woman with bright red spiky hair and a soft underbelly, and she wasn't big on hugs. But Avery pulled her in for one anyway. The old woman took it like a champ, her arms at her sides and lots of eye rolling until it was over, but she didn't pull away. So Avery held on until she felt the tears well up.
"Thank you." There was something magical about this group of women. When they got together, there wasn't a single life they couldn't touch in a positive way. "Last time I watched someone ride that bull, it was my Jonas,"
Wanda Mallory, retired librarian and Sequoia Lakes resident grandma, said.
"We'd just seen that Nicholas Sparks movie about the bull rider, and Jonas wanted to prove he didn't have to be a young gun to last 8 seconds."
Wanda shook her head, but her eyes were glazed over with longing.
"Silly man ended up leaving here with a bag of frozen peas on his parts. Did he last the 8 seconds?
Mavis asked with the seriousness of discussing world politics. All of the ladies leaned forward in one collective movement. Wanda gave a bright smile, then waggled a suggestive brow.
even win a second round when we got home.
Earmuffs, Liv said, covering her ears. You babysit my son with that mouth.
Which reminds me, I'm free to sit Paxton next month for spring fling if you need me to.
Wanda steepled her fingers beneath her chin.
With Jonas gone, I wasn't gonna go this year. So, if you wanted to go with Chuck...
Liv's mouth gaped open in horror.
The guy who works the meat counter at Bunny Slope Supermarket?
I heard he was thinking of asking you, Wanda sang. Even set aside some nice lamb chops for you when you do your usual Monday shopping.
Lamb chops, now that's romantic.
Irene sat back and let out a wistful sigh.
Dale used to bring me pine cones.
Pine cones? Avery asked. Irene's eyes lit, and for the first time in weeks, she didn't look so tired.
Oh, yes. One year I saw a picture of this table setting Martha Stewart did and mentioned how lovely it would look on our table. It was silver and red themed with wood accents and a candle holder in the middle of the table. Not just any candle holder, but one made from a giant coulter cone. Without telling me why, Dale planned a trip with the boys to Bear Valley, and they brought me home 3 perfect coulter cones, which I made into holders.
That's sweet, Avery said, her heart melting a little. Dale had not only gone out of his way to make Irene feel special, but he'd brought her a present that took thought and deep understanding of his wife. Most men would have sent flowers. Carson always sent flowers.
Every year after, he's brought me a different kind of cone for the table.
Sweet and romantic, Avery said, and Liv pinned Avery with a, you are so not helping right now, glare.
Creative or not, Chuck is, like, 50, Liv pointed out.
The silvered women at the table exchanged confused looks, but it was Mavis who spoke.
Free lamb chops, dear. Offers like that don't come along too often.
He's 50, Liv repeated,
and it was clear that the ladies didn't see the problem with a 30-year age gap.
That would be like you dating someone who is 90.
Mavis considered this.
Does he have his real teeth?
Liv took on the same panicked expression she got when the idea of dating was broached. Avery knew that what started as a little gasping and uncomfortable sputtering could quickly turn to tears or a breakout of hives.
I don't think Liv is ready to start dating yet, Avery offered with a supportive wink.
A collective ah of understanding filled the room, followed by several women saying,
We got you, honey.
The ladies might not understand passing up free chops, but they could all empathize with not being ready to move on. Liv blew Avery a grateful kiss across the table, and Avery felt that familiar warmth that came whenever she saw her friends moving forward. Liv might not be ready to date, but she didn't look devastated by the suggestion as she once would have.
How about you?
Mavis's gaze locked onto Grace, who was doing her best to blend into the wallpaper in a pair of nondescript khakis, a baggy white button-up that swallowed her whole, and cream ballet flats, all of which were speckled with various colors of paint.
You could use some lamb chops. You've got plans for the spring fling?
Grace flushed from neck to forehead, her gaze zeroing in on the exit, most likely running through every route she could use to flee. Grace was a private person by nature. Even when they were young, she'd shied away from the spotlight and would rather leave the state than invite someone into her home, even if they came bearing lamb chops.
And when she was cornered, she tended to shout ridiculous things.
So Avery wasn't surprised when Grace shouted,
I'm not looking to date right now either, but you know who is?
Grace's attention went from the exit to her decoy.
Avery!
12 sets of eyes ricocheted around the room, from one end of the table to her.
Grace,
Avery hissed.
Sorry,
she mumbled, appearing completely horrified by her outburst.
But it's true. She even kissed someone.
Avery felt her cheeks heat.
He was a stranger.
Even though it was the truth, she avoided looking Irene's way because, sure, she hadn't known who Ty was when she'd kissed him at the bar, but she knew now, and she still dreamed about kissing him.
And I did it for Bella. It was the one thing she wished she'd had time to do. Go back to Paris and kiss the man who gave her a rose.
The man who had made her friend feel beautiful and treasured with a single romantic gesture. Bella had held on to that rose, a keepsake from a memorable moment in her life, and now it was in Avery's journal, next to a fearless red lipstick kiss on a bar napkin from Backwoods Brewhouse.
You take your first guests on a trek, and now we hear you kissed a stranger?
Irene highlighted the last word in a way that had Avery swallowing hard.
Bella is probably up there right now, bubbling over with joy. I imagine her wearing that pretty red dress of hers, looking, well.
Irene tilted her head to the side, studying Avery like a mother would study her son's new girlfriend.
Like you do right now.
Liv coughed something that sounded a lot like awkward, and Grace busted out laughing. Irene, however, kept her focus on Avery, her smile big and mischievous.
If I had a wish, it would be to ride on a hog again, Mavis said. One more night with the motor rumbling beneath me, the wind in my face, and a good-looking man pressed to my front as we burn rubber down the interstate, the moon lighting our way.
She closed her eyes and sighed with delight.
To remember what it feels like to be young.
Avery saw more joy radiate off Mavis in that moment than she had in the entire 2 years since losing her ability to walk without a cane. Even talking about it, she looked younger, took on a lighter energy. Avery couldn't imagine how trapped a woman who cherished her freedom like Mavis would feel when facing a future confined to a wheelchair. She wasn't in her chair yet, but at the rate her MS was going, the doctors didn't think it would be much longer. And wasn't that a heartbreak of reality? Avery pulled out her memory journal from her purse and flipped to a blank page.